Okie dokie, folks,
country.
And welcome to this week's edition of Monday Night Shaw right here on the Backbreaker Media Network. My name is Kyle Shaw, a.k.a. the Canadian Goose, honk, honk, honk. And joining me today all the way from the proud province of Newfoundland, it is Chili, a.k.a. Travis Canning, the owner, operator, promoter of New Evolution Wrestling. And I'm very happy to have him on here. I'm good friends with Cameron. I'm friends with some of his former employees. I'm friends with some of the other fellows there that I've never even met. Like, I honestly get random calls from Newfoundland wrestlers that just want to bullshit with me for a while. I'm not kidding you. Justin Locke and Aziz called me a couple weeks ago. 6:30 in the morning, you know, there's a time difference, so I'm sure they were partying or whatever, and they called me and just bullshit for an hour, and I was like, oh, this is awesome, the connections you get in wrestling. But Travis, how are you doing, brother? I know you just had some shows.
We just had amazing shows this past weekend. I'm on a super high from those. I like my highs natural. This weekend was a natural high for me. I'm super excited to be back here as well. Thanks for having me.
Oh no, I'm happy to have you back here, bud. Can you just give me a little indication of like what went into putting on these shows, like in this post-pandemic lockdown era? These are probably the first shows you were legally allowed to put on, eh?
So the first shows we were legally allowed to put on since the pandemic was August of last year. We did a couple of outdoor shows.
Mm-hmm.
But inside the venue, we started running again back in November once the COVID cases here subsided quite a bit. They allowed us to run with minimum restrictions, or I should say really tight restrictions, not minimal.
Yeah.
So the first set of shows really would have been November last year. We did a couple of back-to-backs, and then we got through two more in January. And we went into like a second wave here in Newfoundland where everything got shut down again. So these would be the last two shows we just had would be the first two we've had since the second wave lockdown that happened here in Newfoundland.
Yeah. Has the COVID situation gotten better or worse out there? I know out here in Alberta, it kind of blew up for a while. Even some of the wrestlers ended up getting COVID. Poor Marky got COVID and had to be put in induced coma. It was pretty scary.
I've seen that. I'm not overly familiar with him, but I do follow him. I sent him my regards. It's been pretty good here for the most part, actually, compared to everywhere else. Here in the Maritimes have been pretty good, even though we have had lockdowns. It hasn't been as serious as it has been elsewhere in Canada or in other parts of the world. We've been pretty lucky, but we haven't been able to run. Yeah, and you know, if anybody knows anything about Newfoundland, financially, we're in a state of flux. So whenever we have even a small lockdown, it hurts the economy. So economy-wise, we're pretty shitty, actually. But we've had 7 deaths in total since the start of COVID.
Oh, wow. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, oh, wow, what a horrible amount of deaths. Because, like, honestly, like, that's...
One death is
fuck
too many,
all, right? Yeah.
In comparison, we've kind of gotten off pretty lucky, so I'm thankful that our government's been handling it the way they have.
Yeah.
A rigorous time running promotions here in Newfoundland with all the restrictions and everything that we had to do. It was, you know, everything we had to set up and space everything out and only let to sell so many tickets, run at a certain capacity. And things of that nature. So
did it put any limitations on like your roster where like you weren't able to bring in certain outside guys to come because just travel problems or?
Yeah. So I had to have a tournament for our main title and crown a new champion because Tyson Dukes was our champion and he couldn't get back in here. So we were able to run, but I needed the championship. And so we done something with that. So that's been a chore. Danny Duggan, as you know, is in and out of here all the time, periodically with myself over the last several years for tours and things. We haven't done a tour since prior to the first lockdown here. So Danny hasn't been here. And obviously bringing in big names and things like that, flights are basically prohibited. We're loosening that now, but they're pretty much, unless it's for commercial travel, for the most part, it's been... laid up.
My understanding is like a lot of Newfoundland is sort of on an island. So like in order to get there from the mainland, you have to take a ferry, right?
Or flight.
Okay. Like, but if you were going to drive, you would have to take a boat, right?
Yeah. So if you were to drive to Newfoundland from where you are, you would drive from Alberta to Sydney, Nova Scotia, get on a ferry, and end up in either Argentia, Newfoundland, or Port-au-Basque, Newfoundland, one or the other, whichever ferry you take. And you would have to drive to wherever your location is on the island from there.
Yeah. What? How long does the ferry ride, do you know?
The Argentia one is about 12 hours.
Holy.
But when you get off the ferry, you're only about an hour and a half away from St. John's, which is good because that's like the metropolis, basically. If you get off, there is a 7 or 8 hour ride where you can get off at the other end of Newfoundland in Port-au-Basque, and then you have, I think, another 8 hour drive, if I'm not mistaken, to get to St. John's. So you're better off staying on the ferry, in my opinion. Be less of a drive if you're planning on going to like the St. John's area.
Yeah, see, like I'm unfamiliar with that side of Canada, but like I grew up on Vancouver Island.
Right.
I was born in Campbell River and lived in Victoria for a long time, and you know, a trip to Vancouver was kind of a regular, like, you know, once every year type of thing, right? And the ferry ride's like maybe 2 hours. I can't imagine being on a ferry for 12 hours. That's just like,
Most people sleep. I find like that ferry, someone gets on overnight and they get off in the morning. They just rent the cabin, go sleep in a bed, and you know what I mean? And then they get up and they're there.
Yeah. I mean, you almost be better off just to take a plane at that point.
It depends on where you are. And if you like to drive, if you're in Halifax, you're probably, independent how many people are coming with you, it might be cheaper for you to take the ferry. If you're just flying yourself, it might be cheaper.
All right. Well, now that we've discussed Newfoundland geography in great detail, let's veer back into the realm of professional wrestling, shall we?
Sure.
Do you have you booked any future shows? Is there anything on tap for coming up?
Yeah, so I'm actually in the middle of organizing a few shows, but the ones I have right now, the next set of shows we have one coming up in Clarenville, Newfoundland, which is our Summercade Fallout show, which is almost a playoff of the last set of events that we've done. So that's a 400-seat arena, theater, but we're only allowed to have about 100 people there, so social distancing, things like that. So dealing with the same old rhetoric, and I shouldn't say rhetoric because there's a reason for it, but dealing with the same things you're dealing with in St. John's or dealing with in Clarenville. But in 2 weeks' time, we're supposed to be able to have some more restrictions lifted, so we'll see how that works out. And then on July 10th, we have a bar show at Kitty Vitty Brewery, which is basically our homegrown brewery. It's one of the biggest ones here. They have a tap room where it's like all KDVD products, and we're going to set up the ring there, and we're going to do a bar show specifically for that age bracket, the 19 plus age bracket here in Newfoundland, and see how that works. That actually sold out. We released several tickets yesterday based on seating. They released a few more, and that sold out again. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, and that's awesome.
We have a campground show in August that's lined up. That's a paid show. So that's at Catamaran Park, which is in central Newfoundland. So that's coming up on, I believe, August 14th.
That sounds cool, too. I have never wrestled in a campground. That sounds like a great, good old time. You know, when I was with the improv troupe out in Victoria, we would often do like improv camp where we would all go and stay and rent a campsite. Big group campsite, right? And we'd all sleep there, and we would run improv shows at night for all the other people that are camping in the thing. And I've always thought that, like, maybe we should do that with wrestling and just go, the like bunch of guys from the roster, whoever's game, just go set up the ring, and we could all, you know, train during the day and do shows at night, and you know, try and make some money off our merch and stuff, you know.
Yeah, and that's almost a similar setup here, really. You know, they just kind of let us set up on the campground, really, and the guys can sell their merch there, and we get, like, basically paid to do the show, and then it's pretty simple. Like, I'm not handling any tickets or anything for that show. I might print off a few posters, and the guys can sell their merch and make money. It's pretty well. It's not that different from what you would think.
Yeah, that's I mean, that's got to be good for you, because like one thing I always discuss with anyone that's a promoter that comes on here is just the level of stress and like responsibility you have on your shoulders.
Yeah, well, that's the one thing, and I think it leads to a lot of combat when you're dealing with a bunch of wrestlers on a show who, for lack of a better term, are just trying to get their own needs met, because that's what they do. Just as much as I do as a promoter, I want to make money, they want to make money. But a lot of the times what I find is that gets lost. Like, I have a huge weight on my shoulders all the time. And I take on that responsibility. It is my responsibility, but it's just, it's really hard to convey messages properly to a lot of the guys who are also trying to find ways to scrape up their own dollars. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And where I'm the only person here, they don't really have another option. So that's frustrating on them too. So yeah, the hardest part is communicating that to people, that this is a really high stressful situation and you guys can leave, I can't. Essentially.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, last time you did tell me that while you were the promoter and handling like the business end, you did have somebody else that sort of takes care of the storylines and putting together the book and whatnot. Is that still the case?
So booking wise, yes. Now, there are certain things that I do the booking for, just because the booker thinks that I'm better at it. But so he asked me to be more hands on with it. But other than that, it's 99% on him, the booker, and he's not a wrestler, which I absolutely love because it provides some objectivity in that sense. So, yeah, and that will be our main referee, Justin Crickard. He does a lot of work for us. He's our writer, our booker, our referee, our producer, post-production guy. you name the list. He's a one-stop shop, dude. Like
Webmaster, probably does all the website stuff, eh?
Yeah, well, actually, in the website, no. Social media, some. Actually, Cam is the guy that's taken the lead on this on the website in the past, I'll say 7-8 months. But prior to that, my graphic design guy was doing it. But Cam is trying to get his feet wet with it, and I felt like, you know, this dude has got some juices stirring in his brain and got some creativity he needs to get out. We were in the middle of a pandemic. I said, Cam, go for it. And he's done an amazing job with it.
Yeah, I'm very happy. Cameron actually did a t-shirt design for me one time. I just woke up and, you know, I got a Facebook message. Hey, I made this for you, Goose. And I sell t-shirts of it now. He does good work. And if there is any other wrestlers out there, I mean, Cam's a good friend of mine, so he gave me the good friend deal there. But if there's any other wrestlers out there, he will give you the brother deal. And like, we're talking like $25 for a design or something, which, you know, you turn around and sell 3 shirts, you make your $25 back like easily, right?
So, yeah. And the one thing he doesn't do for me is my posters. I haven't really, now I let him try them and things like that, but I haven't deviated away from the guy I use. He's very good, like exceptionally good. I firmly believe I have one of the best show posters in Canada every single time I run a show. So I'm not willing to part with him yet, but that's just like my personal attachment to putting out really great graphics. But like, eventually Cam's gonna get there, and that thing's gonna, the ball's gonna roll with him in that regard. And I have no doubt in my mind he's just gonna keep getting better and better and better at it.
I really do think that like there's all levels of posters. I have seen some of the ugliest, most, oh my god, who made this trash? Why did they even put this up on the internet type posters? And then I've seen absolutely amazing stuff. Like some of your posters are really great. Some of the ECCW posters out of BC have been fantastic. We've had some good ones out here for RCW and PWA. But like, and I'm not going to name names because that would be a crappy thing to do. But I have legit seen posters where they were clearly just getting pictures of all different. Some of them have cutout guys. Some of them are the full pictures. You know, words are spelled wrong. There's no time or date on the poster. The logo's
all like it was made using Microsoft Paint from Windows 95.
Yeah. But it's interesting that you talk about that sort of stuff, because when you think about wrestling promoting, like, the poster is not really the first thing that comes to mind. Is there any other like aspects of promoting that are super important, but are not the sort of thing that people would generally consider to be like if you were thinking, oh, I'm going to go run a wrestling promotion, but you've never done it before, would escape your mind?
If you were the type of person that cannot actually go out and physically talk to people and you hide behind a keyboard, you need to change it. For a really long time over the past 25 years, and look, I'm just random wrestling promoter in Newfoundland, but I also work in a field where communication is key. I've done lots of things around communication, how important it is. One of the things that we noticed that, like, outside of this pandemic, especially where businesses and stuff are concerned, where events and stuff are being promoted, the internet's not cutting it anymore. Years ago, the internet was an extra value add that got you extra publicity for being on the internet. As time went on, people leaned on it and didn't do any of the grassroots promoting.
Yeah.
And they really relied on the internet. So now everything is on the internet. So anything that you put on the internet doesn't have the same value that it did 20, 25 years ago. Because if I put up a wrestling poster, there's 20 other wrestling posters up alongside of it. And it gets very convoluted. So what's really missing now is people have kind of set back and have not done the grassroots promoting of going out and shaking the hands, the phone calls, getting on the phone and talking to somebody and being like, you know, hey, can we have a meeting? And even if the person's not interested, just be like, okay, well, how about this? At least have the meeting with me. And if the meeting's still no, then it's no, but have the meeting with me first. Just that extra push. I find like a lot of people are missing that today and they rely on the internet way too much. That hands-on approach is still there and it's evolving back into almost a hybrid. You can't just do it one way anymore. You can't rely on one specific thing. A lot of old school promoters years ago didn't want to use the internet. They relied on handshakes and word of mouth. I think you need a lot of that again. And you can't abuse the internet. You need to have to find creative ways to use it, but you can't rely on it. Yeah. And that's where I'm to with it. If there's something that's missing today, it's people, not just wrestling, live events in general are missing. People just put up a poster, make a Facebook event ad and think, okay, people are going to show up. No, motherfucker, they're not going to show up. You need to put the work in because there's 100 people next to you making a similar event on the same day. And if it's not the same event and it's on the same day, you might still be screwed, especially if your audience is family oriented, you know? Mm. So there's lots of things to think about there, right?
100%. Like, I can't tell you, like, when I was a kid or even as an adult, like, I'll be walking down the street and I'll see a wrestling poster up on a telephone pole and it grabs my attention and I'm like, oh, when is this? Where is it going down? What's happening here? You know, I've even time or two and it wasn't because I wanted to do any damage to the promotion or anything. I just want to keep the information myself. So I'll just take the whole poster and be like, okay, cool. Like that. Generally I'll phone a buddy or two and be like, hey, I found out there, this is going on. You want to come with me? And we'll go check it out, right? But like it is like I hear you. Like there's definitely probably a more concentration done on just, you know, getting the word out there via the internet or over like actual physical, like going places and talking to people. And I mean, it could be real rough. I've done a little bit of that sort of stuff when Danny Duggan brought CWE to Red Deer. He asked me to go and seek out a place to do the after party for. So I had to go and talk to a bunch of different like businesses and stuff. And eventually I was pretty happy because I found a bowling alley that was up for it. And they bought the after party and stuff. And we went and had a good time. And it was like, yeah. Right. Yeah.
But the thing is if you don't have that personal contact where someone's familiar with you, you know, imagine sending an email to that same person. How many emails do they get?
I don't know. Like that's how I did it. I honestly just emailed them. I walked in there too and brought a package with me and said, hey, this is what CWE is offering. They
followed up, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And then I think I had like two or three meetings with this lady before everything was actually like confirmed and whatnot. But right. I pretty much, put that whole thing on, like, hey, Brutus the Barber Beefcake is going to be here. And he's, you know, he wrestled with Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 9. And then they're like, oh, Hulk Hogan, we know who that is. WrestleMania, we know what that is. Like, so even if they're not familiar with Brutus Beefcake, they knew what was going on.
And they knew it was probably something that was they were going to be able to make money off of in the end. Is what it was. Right? You weren't just some and you did the right thing there. And I mean, it doesn't just work with those things. I mean, you can ask Cameron about this. One of the things he came to me and said he learned from me was that you going around and doing the rigorous promoting and connecting with people, you end up with stuff almost by accident. Like you're putting effort in, and you might not see it right away, but when you get it, it's like, oh, this happened because I kept doing this. Cameron went back to a place, I don't know, 2-3 times. Hey, I'm a wrestler. This is who I work for. Here's our poster. Eventually, when he went back, he ended up landing himself on the cover of a local newspaper for free.
That's awesome.
So, like, and this was just really him just being himself, being a good-natured human being, trying to, like, grassroots, put in some work. And, hey, man, I got an article to fill. Let's do an article because you're from here. You're living – well, you're not from here, but you're living here. We can write an article about a local wrestler, and you can come back and forth to us now. I know you. We're on a good path. And, you know, it, so it opened up a door organically. And you might get rejected and get 100 no's at first, but that person knows who you are.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah.
So
I've even been sent by Squig a few times to go in and seek out venues. And, you know, I was not super successful in that. But a lot of times, like, he'd send me to the venue and I'd be like, I don't know if the ceiling's quite high enough here. Like, eventually I had to measure the length of the ring just to determine, okay, like, is the ring going to fit in here? And, okay, if we can get the ring in here, how much clearance do we have off that? Because, like, I don't want to take a suplex and take out the ceiling. You know what I mean?
Well, man, we've wrestled in ceilings where, like, wrestlers have, like, done Vader bombs and kicked the tiles out of the ceiling. Like, it's a lot of the times for us, we can just, and not to segue, but we can just kind of like manipulate our matches such that we don't do certain things. Because those venues are often like intimate little darlings of crowds that really do appreciate the product because they don't get anything normally a whole lot out there like that. So like if you can find a little like little Lions Club or a little place in like just outskirts of not a regular city.
Yeah.
The fact that someone's willing to come to them and often shows them that people value their community. So they'll show up and support. It doesn't even need to be any type of specific content. They'll just bring their families out, man.
Yeah.
You know,
I've definitely like I think I've seen and I just probably want to say this so I can bring it up because I think it's funny. But Jeremiah Javen, when I had him on the podcast, sent me some videos and one of them was from a small little club in a little city called Dildo. And
Jimmy Fallon had fun with that one.
Yeah, but it's apparently like a wrestling mecca out there in Newfoundland because I'll be honest with you, when I watched that video, I was like, oh, I would love to wrestle here because the crowd just looks like they would eat my stuff up with like, you know.
So I brought in Johnny Devine, I think back in 2018, done a little bit of a thing with Locke here.
Oh, solid.
And they had a great match. And while he was here, he found out that I had another show booked that same weekend. And he was like, why did you only book me for the one show? I was like, because when I booked you and we booked the flight, the other show didn't exist at the time. And so it was like added after. So I never budgeted him in to do the other show because, you know, so I kind of just left it at that. He's like, where is it? I was Dildo. He's like, I could have wrestled in Dildo. I was like, well, he's like, dude, you had to bring me back so we can wrestle in Dildo. And, you know, he just – obviously he wants more bookings, you know, because why not? And God love him, you know. And but, yes, when he found that out, he was a little bit, like, shocked that he wasn't on the show. And when he found out it was in Dildo, he was had a little bit of disappointment because he wanted to wrestle in Dildo.
I got to meet Johnny Devine for the, like, first time this year. He's a very interesting guy. I like him, though. He's, like, old school.
He is, and he reminds me of a dude that's like literally no BS, no, you know, don't fuck around. And I kind of like that because he's not going to let people get over his time. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I was pretty nervous there for a little while because Squig did. He was like, I'm going to put you in one of the matches with Devine. And I was like, oh, okay. Because, like, I heard some guys telling some stories about how he doesn't, you know, take any trash and he'll, you know,
Did you end up in the ring with him?
No, I didn't. But I talked to Michael Richard Blaze, and he was like, Kyle, like, you're like super humble. Just walk up and be like, what do you want to do? And you'll be fine. Cause like he said, the problem is that people approach him and are like, yeah, let's do this tonight. Oh, you know, and propose a bunch of crazy ideas. And that's, you know, that's definitely not my modus operandi. I usually just show up and be like, what would you like to do? And
yeah, I kind of agree with your friend in that sense, because, hey, look, the dude's a veteran, you know, he's been around a long time. If you go up and ask him, hey, what would you like to do? He's going to put something together, and he's not going to tell you can't do anything, because he also wants to have a good match. He wants to know, hey, what can you do? Mm-hmm. And he'll help you piece some stuff in. You know what I mean? Like, because not these guys, they, like, he's a trainer and everything, right? Like, he knows it from the ground up. He knows he wants to have a good match every single time. So if you ever have the opportunity to get in the ring with him, I totally recommend doing it. You'll come out the better for it. Even if something does go wrong, in the end, you'll still be better for it. Locke will tell you the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely an aspect of that added to my nervousness is that, like, I have not actually ever competed with anyone that's been on TV or anything. So it would have been like the first time, right? And then he actually did. When he came in, he wrestled a couple of guys and ended up getting hurt. And I, you know, afterwards went to say, hey, how you doing? Are you okay? And he was not okay. And he was, do I look okay? And blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, okay. You know, sorry to bother you. And just kind of, you know, shook his hand and politely left him alone, because he didn't seem like he was really in a chatty mood at that point. And, you know, so but
a better question there would have been, hey man, can I get you anything to help you?
Yeah, you know, not okay. Live and learn. Like, but definitely somebody I have mad respect for, because he did do a seminar for the Top Talent Wrestling Academy where I train, and it was during the pandemic when we weren't allowed to actually physically train, so we're all there sort of doing everything via computer screen like we are now. And his seminar went on, it was a 4-hour seminar. Like, it was supposed to be like an hour, but we just kept riffing for like 4 hours. And from what I heard, like, he didn't even charge metal for the seminar or anything. So like that guy wants to give back to the business, and I can appreciate that. And
that was the best part about booking him here to this day. And don't get me wrong, we've had a lot of great people in and out of here before and since. Tyson Duke specifically has done really great. The one thing people keep talking about here, anybody that done Johnny Devine's seminar when he was here, they cannot speak highly enough about it. It's always at the top, no matter how many seminars they've done since. They fall back on that one. Like, that one was the most informative one I've ever done.
Yeah, it was. That was one of my favorite seminars that we did, because we did a few of them. There was one with Ethan Page. There was one with Rick Victor. One with Johnny Devine. We did one with Duke Durango, Chris Dickinson from MLW. And honestly, the ones with Devine and Duke Durango were my favorite, just because they are also like Alberta guys. And I primarily wrestle in Alberta, so I found that their information was sort of the most relevant to my situation. But yeah, those were some stupendous opportunities for sure. We talked earlier about your show that you got coming up at the bar there. That's the 19 plus show. And yeah. I know that NEW is kind of branched off and also has done stuff as Cutting Edge Wrestling is sort of your adult brand. Is that going to be an adult Cutting Edge Wrestling branded show? The 18 plus bar show?
No. The Cutting Edge Wrestling thing is, I don't know where that's to right now. We'll call that up in the air. I don't really have an answer for Cutting Edge Wrestling right now, but I do know one of the things that I've lacked over the past couple of years, maybe even 3 years before the pandemic, was I don't feel like I put enough effort into the NEW brand, which is essentially my brand, because I love Cutting Edge Wrestling so much. I've cut my teeth there that I just didn't want to stop using the name or being involved with it or whatever the case may be. But I find what happened was I put my effort in the wrong places and like too much. You know what I mean? Not to say that I can't be involved and do those things and use that name, but I find like NEW kind of it would have been a lot easier to do some things with NEW and push forward with some things had my focus had been more on that instead of being distracted by the cutting edge stuff. So at least right now, NEW is where I'm at with it, and it's going to be going forward for the next little while. That doesn't mean anything with CEW can't happen in the future, but there's a lot of guys I'm not booking, not to get into any gritty details, but there's a lot of things that would need to change for a CEW event to happen.
Oh, okay. So is CEW not like solely owned by you as well? I thought it was kind of like you had bought them out and sort of everything.
It wasn't really a bought out. It was like, so here's what happened. Years ago, CEW was actually the name. Well, okay, first of all, the company at that time back in like the 90s was never like registered a business or anything like that. But the original owners, for lack of a better term, was Sailor White. And then Vince Austin came on as like a co-founder.
Okay.
Over time, when Sailor died, like a while later, that thing shut down. When it relaunched in 2011, Vince Austin was there and Tony King was there. And they were the initial people that launched it. We all started coming together and basically purchasing things to start the company or start a new version of CEW. So Vince Austin and Tony went in on some of the ring, and then everybody else started throwing money at the ring and paying for things like canvas banners and like paint and welding and all this kind of stuff. Long story short, there's a lot of moving parts to who actually owns what.
It sounds like a bunch of guys in Newfoundland, like the Little Rascals, all got together to pool together whatever they could just to bring this promotion
together.
So
here's what actually happened. When CEW shut down years ago after Sailor died, there was another company that was on the go at the time. I believe it was RPW. And that got converted somehow and was sold to a guy named Steve Clark and another guy, Dan Bjorkdal, and they started Legend City Wrestling, LCW.
Okay.
LCW brought in a dude from the Maritimes called Mike Hughes, really great wrestler. But Mike, depending on who you talk to, you get a different version of who that person is. And it's my understanding that he didn't want to book a lot of the local talent that was here. Which was evident by the fact that he didn't. So there were guys like Vince Austin and a number of people that essentially weren't getting booked. Tony King wasn't getting booked. Tony had wrestled up with RCW for a while, came back home. He wasn't getting booked. And Mike Hughes just was like, I don't want to use you guys. Thought they were basically backyarders or lesser or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it just got to the point where there's a bunch of people who are – could put off a really great show. I'm not saying they were all perfect, but you know the way indie wrestling is.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of people sitting around and they were like, you know, fuck this. We can do this too. So then I get a call from my buddy, Buck, and he's like, you want to get back involved? Cause I've been out for years and I thought it was a good idea. So as we moved along further and further and further, ownership, well, lots of people owned that company while I was there, including me, Tony Gord, a guy named Dan, another guy named Chris. There was a list is endless. Like,
so there was like a board of directors type thing, but
it wasn't even that. It's just people couldn't do it, so someone else took over. And Gord realized he was in over his head once he had the ring, and kind of like went off to Alberta to work. So they wrote him out. All of a sudden, Tony's like, I don't want to do this by myself anymore. I really just like to wrestle. This is a lot of stress for me.
Yeah.
And so then two other people took it over and they lost a pile of money. They bowed out. So we had the ring there. And then I financially took it over and Buck and Don did the booking. And then there was a financial issue or a perceived financial issue, because I don't want to overstep and say anything bad about anybody, but I thought my money was at risk. I'll leave it at that. So I bowed out of CEW and started NEW. They continued to run CEW until they couldn't anymore. And then I started running both, hence why we ended up where two now. So long-winded, but that's the history from 2011 to now on CEW. Who owns CEW? The legal owner of the CEW ring is Tony. But who owns the company? Man, different people have ran it. You know, it's like, you know, when an old school band gets back together for another fucking tour.
Sure.
That's like what CEW has turned into. Like, I'm just going to get together and bang out our hits once in a while. At least that's how I perceive it anyway.
Okay.
I'm sure some of the guys don't feel that way, but that's kind of what it's turned into. But that's kind of where it's at. And I know is not happy with a lot of the things and how it turned out, and then that's fine. I understand and respect his opinion on that. It, like, once you get beyond the anger, there's definitely some validity to the stuff that he's been saying. But so I won't go into too much detail on it. But I did what I could and do what I can with the cards that I'm dealt mm-hmm. in regards to CEW. And I think I'm the only one here that's willing to put the proper effort into doing anything the way it should be done.
Yeah.
So not that the other people can't do it, because I'm not doing anything anybody else can't do. They just, people have different priorities, different expectations and whatever. And I'm really the one that's like, I want to promote. Like, that's what I do. That's what I love. I want to be a promoter. I would promote anything.
Yeah.
You know, I want to promote comedy even, you know.
That's all.
You know, that's something that I would like to do. But so that's pretty much why I ended up where we are, why I essentially am supporting two names right now.
Do you know when the last time you guys ran a Cutting Edge show was?
Yeah, it was the beginning of March in 2020. It was the last wrestling show that we did before we shut down for the pandemic.
Cool. Well, maybe you could do it like make it like a sort of a once every year type thing, like you said, and just have the guys coming back together to put the band back together and play their greatest hits. Like, I find, like, sometimes, like, I know Jim Cornette says a lot of times, like, how can they miss you if you never go away, right? And then the longer time you spend away, when you do come back, you get that bigger reaction, which I'm sure was part of the reason for your success for the shows this weekend.
Yeah, it was. What I'm finding is that the people, because there's less tickets and there's less wrestling shows, the higher demand for the tickets is there, no doubt. You know what I mean? But I feel like we're still missing that that extra flame, that extra spark from not having the other 4/5 of our audience. Cause we normally get like 400 or 500 people in this market. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So the CLB should have been relatively sold to capacity. Most times we do get to capacity. So, I mean, but that's hard, and it's hard for the guys too. The biggest thing for them is not being able to sell merch the proper way, because there's things with that too. Like, they can only sell merch before the shows. There's no intermission. We have to clean down the ropes and everything, and sanitize everything in between every single match. It's
wow,
yeah. So the feeling for the show is still there from the fans that show up, but you know the way like a wrestling show flows. So it's very disruptive to do certain things in the context of a show, like stop everything and clean everything before you proceed. And you don't get that break in between for the fans to go get that break, get their washer break in, get them to feel comfortable, get them to meet the wrestlers, and get that little bit of extra merch, you know, that they want them to buy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's hard, right? But it's definitely the vibe for like the demand for the product is definitely there more now than what it has been, I think, because in live events in general, because people just want to get out.
Yeah. No, people are looking to get entertained for sure. I really enjoyed like learning about like the history and stuff. And you brought up this fellow, Mike Hughes. Is he the fellow that was on the wrestling reality? Like the
With Brody Steele.
Okay, Brody Steele's the guy I'm thinking of because
Cardinal Sinners. So those guys are based out of the Maritimes over in like the Halifax, New Brunswick area. I think Mike Hughes still has a company called Red Rock Wrestling in PEI. He pretty much owns PEI in terms of wrestling.
Wow, like PEI must be an isolated place for wrestlers, eh? Like,
Not really. There's a bridge that goes from PEI to New Brunswick, so it's pretty accessible. It's not like in Newfoundland where you need to get on a ferry, but it's definitely more isolated, I guess, than the rest of the places in on the mainland, we'll call it, for sure.
Here we go talking about geography again.
Well, you know what? Wrestling and geography is important, man, especially, dude, I've had so many questions. One of the things I get people messaging me all the time looking for bookings that are nowhere near Newfoundland. And they're like, can we just drive there? I'm like, do you have a car that floats?
Yeah.
And I'm like, and they just have no clue. And you'd be surprised at how often we end up talking about geography. Like geography when it comes to Newfoundland and wrestling is absolutely important. And I'll tell you something else too, why it's important. We have a very old school working environment here. Do you ever heard of what's something called a virgin territory?
No.
Well, if you talk to a veteran, they'll describe a virgin territory as something that really hasn't been tapped into the way other markets have. In other words, the audience isn't spoiled. They don't get an over an abundance of certain things. So when they get them, they appreciate them. And the work in terms of wrestling is often easier. You'll get a real old school feel here. Like you'll get over here more so a character base and technical wrestling and good solid mat work and heat than you will like pop in the crowd with a pile of exciting moves. And that works too, but you get more so like character based stuff here. Old school.
Yeah.
I'm talking like Bill Watts, Smoky Mountain type style. Stuff, right?
Yeah, that I think is one of the things I picked up on when I was watching Justin and Javen wrestle in Dildo. It's just like they went out and, you know, basically you play to the crowd and you get crazy, crazy reactions. And it's like, I would have had to do a fucking moonsault to get that pop, you know?
Like, yeah. So, and dude, you can – but imagine a pop you get if you time the moonsault right.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like you can still have those things. It just when there's not a wrestling promotion around every single corner, you know, it's kind of treated – you get a different reaction because there's different appreciation for things you're not seeing every day, right?
Mm-hmm.
So geography – you'd be surprised how intertwined geography is in terms of wrestling.
And then as far as like going back to the day, they like talking about like, you know, Vince Austin and Tony King and those guys who are all like homegrown Newfoundland wrestlers. They're all trained by Sailor White. Yes, no?
I don't think Tony's trained by Sailor White. I think actually, if I'm not mistaken, Tony went to Alberta. He might have had some initial training from like Vince Austin and some of his peers that were around at the time. To my knowledge, Tony went up away and got some training there. I do think he actually wrestled for Squig at one point too. I don't know exactly all of Tony's training cause he picked it up bits and pieces from everywhere. But, but he's well-rounded, I think.
Okay, just because, like, I mean, when I talking about this, the guy that didn't want to use Tony and Vince and those guys, it's like, I mean, I find that baffling just because, like, I've wrestled Vince Austin numerous occasions, and he's, like, my favorite opponent almost to wrestle because, like, you know, he's top three for sure because his character work is on point. He's you know, he's always been safe to work with. I don't have to worry about anything like that. He's always like personable and cool and just wants to have a great match. And his character work is phenomenal, you know.
I agree to a point with his work. Gord can have a great match with anybody, but I find a lot of the times, especially back here, in Newfoundland, they had a different version of Vince Austin than what you guys have up there. And it's weird because the stories I hear from Vince Austin from Alberta, I'm like, is that the same guy? you know, and I'm very puzzled, and I don't know if it's just like him getting older and wiser or whatever the case may be, but you know, like, and don't get me wrong, he has no direct heat here per se, but there's definitely an element of that dude can be very dangerous, or that dude probably gave me some concussions and didn't give a shit, or at least in his younger days, that dude might have possibly, potentially, hypothetically not been sober when he was in the ring and things didn't go the way they went. And you know, he's very good when he's put in a situation where he's not the promoter as well, too, because I think the pressure's off. You know what I mean? So there's, I think there's a lot of reasons why it's different, right? Okay.
Well, like I say, like I'm – you know, he's one of my best friends in wrestling. So like, I'll always go to that bat for Vince Austin for sure. Like I've ridden to towns up and down the roads with him for hours at a time. And it's every time it's just like going to wrestling school.
Like, yeah, no, and I agree. And I'm not saying anything to trash him. I'm just saying.
No, no. Like, yeah. 100%.
I want to hear all of those stories from Alberta, because I'll tell you, there is a side of Vince Austin that I do like very much. And it doesn't come out very often, but it seems like it's come out a lot more in Alberta than it has here. When you get to know the guy and sit down and talk to him, he's very comical. Even he has a certain comedy about him that you don't get anywhere else. And you know, he was one of my good buddies before he left. When he left, his dad got sick, and I took all the stuff that he had stored in his dad's house from when he was a kid and put it in my house. It was there for like 3-4 years. One room, and he's never lived in my house, but one room was completely dedicated to all of Vince Austin shit. So like, at one point in time, me and him, we're very close, but I don't know where he's to and where I'm to mentally to be able to say we have a great relationship, but I don't think we have a bad one, if that's fair.
How familiar are you with like the Alberta wrestling scene out here? Are you familiar with a lot of the guys at all, or do you keep up with what goes on?
I don't. I'm starting to now because of the recent arrangement I've had with Otto, where we're kind of going to do like some sort of partnership and start some degree down the road, which hopefully some of the guys from the Alberta scene will come here. I'm more so familiar with what Danny's been doing, because Danny's been in and out of here pretty much since after the first year I was running.
Okay, that's
so. The
partnership with Otto, that's interesting. Can you give me any of like the details on that? Like,
well, essentially, what it is, it's almost like an old school. An upgraded version, like an old school territory type situation where, essentially, we're just kind of boost each other up. So there's going to be a number of companies across North America, probably the world.
Yeah. Just before we move on, I just want to explain. Otto is Vinny Fever from Can-Am Wrestling. If you're listening to this and you're like, who is Otto? What is this deal that's going on? Yeah. Can-Am Wrestling is relaunching. They're actually having their first show July the 3rd at the a campground about an hour north of Calgary. And so that's going to be a huge, huge event, and I can't wait for the fallout of that. I know that I've already talked to Otto, and him and some of his students are going to come on to my new Love Wrestling show, The Goose Call, that Cameron Stevens was the first guest on, and we're actually going to put on the 30-man student battle royal that the AWA, Alberta Wrestling Academy, is going to be putting on that show, and we're going to be covering that on The Goose Call with Otto and a number of his wrestling students. So we're looking forward to that over on Love Wrestling. I, of course, am happy to hear that. But continue, as you're saying, just like they've got partnerships all over the world going on right now.
Right. So we're a part of that, a small part. And I guess one of the things it's going to do for everybody is it's sort of going to raise the value of a lot of the independent talent and independent promotions in general. I guess we're just going to support each other, promote each other. And if financial situations work, we're going to do like probably some talent exchanges. So what you're probably going to see is some people from Newfoundland are probably going to travel and do some work with Can-Am and maybe other promotions, and vice versa. Like some of the guys from there are probably going to come here You know, try to arrange it around a tour. Maybe have four or five guys drive here when the weather is good, and you know, that type of thing. So it's really just a commitment to each other. And I don't know all the specifics yet because it's still sort of in its embryonic stages, we'll call it. Mm-hmm. But it is picking up quite nicely. So as more things come out, I'll be able to talk about it more. But I don't – and maybe Otto, if you have him on there, he'll be able to give you a little bit more of an idea and a concept. Essentially, it's going to mimic an old-school NWA territory type setup, except it involved a bunch of independent promotions across the world.
Well, I mean, if it gives guys the opportunities, I'm all for that. I mean, and selfishly, especially if I get to be involved in any of this, I would be happy to be.
I'm sure you will, man. Like, I mean, there's just so much going on. I'd be shocked if there wasn't an opportunity there. I can't speak for anything specific, but mm-hmm. It's going to create opportunities for a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm really stoked for all the stuff they got going on. I know that there's been some already been some like serious talks in the work between Otto and some of the folks down in Mexico. Sweet Daddy Soul is going to he's been going back and forth Mexico to Canada, and he's going to be on this big July 3rd show, and that makes me incredibly happy because like he's quickly becoming like an international superstar, which I think is incredibly cool because I have wrestled him and one day I'll be able to say like I've wrestled an international superstar, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and I'm looking at that poster, and like Sweet Daddy was here, and I was happy with the little bit of time I got to spend with him in terms of like him being in the ring and everything. I thought he got over it with the crowd here instantly. Him going to Mexico was just broadening his scope of things he's able to do, and I'd say if I booked him now, if he managed to get back here, he'd probably be a completely different animal altogether than what he was based on the experiences he's had. Yeah. So I'm looking at that poster too for the campground show that just came out, and seeing they got Danny Duggan and Johnny Devine booked, and I'm like, man, this is off to such a good start. I love two of those guys. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty close with Danny, and so Danny taking that booking sheds another a different shade of light on it for me too, because it's like, okay, this is awesome.
Yeah, you know? I Danny does a lot of great work all over Canada and gives a lot of guys opportunities. And there's definitely been like he brings in a lot of names and tours with them and stuff. And I have a lot of respect for Danny Duggan. And honestly, sometimes like if there's people that haven't been on like Monday Night Shaw, sometimes it's because like I'm almost like nervous to talk and ask Danny to come on the show. You know what I mean?
I can't speak for Danny, but Danny's a pretty Danny likes his publicity.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure there's a way for you guys to work it out, but you'd have to talk to him on specifics on that. But no doubt in my mind, he would do it.
Yeah, I'd like to have him on. I had AJ Sanchez on here because Danny and AJ went on Monday night, or not. No, well, AJ came on Monday Night Shaw, but the Friday before that, they had both been on Chris Jericho's podcast. And so I was like, oh, well, AJ's going to come on. And like, we arranged the date far before I even found out he was doing Jericho's thing, right? And then, yeah, so that was a cool little thing for me because like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon type thing, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, Jericho, who can't be a fan of him, right?
Yeah, I've had that happen to me too. Like, weird. Like, I booked Hurricane 1 year, and then like a week later, he was in the Rumble, or like less than a month later, he was in the Rumble, and I get a pile of texts like, "You just booked the Rumble entry." And I'm like, "Yeah, okay." Same thing happened with Tommy Dreamer. 1 year, we were just after using him. He was in the Rumble, and he was actively had a date on the books with us, which was cool. And it's mind boggling from someone just like random promoter here in Newfoundland, and like I guess. I get random people message me and they're like, "Hey man, this is so cool." And it was cool. But then when you realize you're a wrestling promoter, the coolness often wears off because it becomes, you realize you're not a fan, not in that moment. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like, you don't treat it that way anymore. So I'm kind of numb to the idea now, but it's definitely a cool concept to, you know, "Hey man, these phone numbers I got in my phone are, man, shit just got real." Like that happens, right? And you start to mark out a little bit, but you got to reel yourself back in.
Yeah, I mean, it's important not to be like a total mark and whatnot when you're, because like people are there for professional reasons and stuff, but there's also like there is that part of you that like it's hard to just be like, hey, not be like, hey, I enjoy your work or whatever, you know?
Right. Well, for me, I'm like, and Danny listens to this, he'll laugh. I'm actually a really big mark for Danny, and not like Danny the wrestler, like Danny, like the promoter, the human being. Like, I honestly want to do some version of what he does in terms of how he promotes. I want to do that with Newfoundland. Like, I want to travel repeatedly. I want to do like really long tours. I want those things to happen. I've almost, in my mind, I have a framework mapped out that's almost mimicking the things that he's already done across Canada. I look at him and I do idolize him quite a bit, to be honest with you, for the things that he's done. And maybe that's a bad thing. I don't know, because you kind of get lost when you look at somebody a certain way too much. But just I want to use what experiences he's had to my advantage and help my own company grow. Right. So and every time I see him be successful, and he's covered my ass, man. He saved my ass. And I won't get into details, but there was an incident with where one of my shows, would I had a big name booked on it, and that person probably wouldn't have showed up if Danny hadn't fucking had my number. I'll put it that way.
Oh.
And he saved my company, probably would have went under because that was a huge financial investment. And I owe Danny a debt of gratitude. I'll say that.
Well, I mean, that's that. I'm happy to hear that he helped you out there. I have heard that out there in Winnipeg that although there is like different promotions and stuff, they're not above helping each other out for sure. And I mean, it's even the same thing in here, like in Alberta. Like I've heard stories of like ring trucks breaking down and promoters calling rival promoters and just, you know, so they go pick up the trailer or, you know, lend the ring to them, like that kind of stuff goes on. And I think that's really cool because like at the end of the day, as much as there is all these big egos in wrestling, we're all here because we love wrestling, you know?
Right.
And the fans, they're one thing, but like the boys, the guys that are wrestling, everybody involved in the backstage production, the referees, especially the fans and especially the promoters are like the biggest fans of all, you know?
Yeah, that is absolutely true. And you have to be because you're literally starving yourself and passion for wrestling. And go look up the word passion. I think it's Latin and it's derivative of literally to survive. Like you're literally passionate. You are basically forcing yourself to survive at something. Sacrificing. So I mean, and you had to love it and had to be a fan of it in order to do it.
Okay, we are gonna wrap this up because we've been going for an hour. So I'm gonna hit you with one more question here. I hit Squig with some of these last time I interviewed him. If you had the option to bring in three independent wrestlers from across Canada to come to the New Evolution Wrestling and take part and be part of the roster for shows, who would those three guys be?
Off the top of my head?
Yeah.
I
mean, so obviously Dukes and Danny and those guys have already been talked about. So let's get three fresh names.
All right. I see a lot of good in AJ Sanchez. I really like him. Off the top of my head, it's hard. I would love to have Johnny Devine back. And I would say Josh Alexander.
Oh, okay.
Even though he's with Impact, but like he's technically still got an independent contract. So, and he's based out of Ontario. So yeah, I would go with those three.
Those are some very good picks. Josh Alexander came here and did a show for us a little while ago. He's a solid dude. Yeah,
he was great.
He did a seminar for the fellas down at the AWA thing, and I was kind of cheesed. I wasn't able to be a part of it because I would have liked to have learned some stuff from him and checked out the Alberta Wrestling Academy for sure. Chili, thank you so much for coming on the podcast again here, bud. It was a good time. I hope that we didn't get in too much hot water. I know that that's been a concern every time I've had you. I had Hawks, and yeah, there was a little bit of animosity going on. But, you know, this is Monday Night Shaw, and we're all about spreading the word about how we love wrestling. Yeah.
It's all about positive, and we love wrestling. And honestly, dude, calling a spade a spade, I don't have any animosity towards anybody. I'm just trying to do what's right for my company. And I appreciate everybody's hard work, whether they believe that or not, I do. And I just believe that things like this, these avenues for us to come on and talk about how we love wrestling, just leaves everybody in a better place. So I'm very thankful you were able to have me on here today.
Yeah, I 100%. Like, I'm right there with you. Like, a lot of, I've said it a million times that, like, when, even though there's, you know, egos and a lot of big heads, pretty much at the end of the day, I'm just here to entertain people with my friends. And that's how I like to look at wrestling. So thanks again for coming on the show. This has been Backbreaker Media Network. I am Kyle Shaw, a.k.a. The Canadian Goose, and this has been Travis Canning. Make sure you check out NEW. Before we go, give us the NEW social medias and whatnot so people can follow New Evolution Wrestling.
So on Instagram, it's just search New Evolution Wrestling. It should just come up. It's just at New Evolution Wrestling. On Twitter, we're at NEW Wrestling NL. Facebook, it's just New Evolution Wrestling NL. And our website is newevolutionwrestling.com. So if you go to any of those places, you'll find us.
Awesome possum, buddy. All righty. Well, we're going to call it there. And thank you so much. Nova Scotia and New Brunswick, Quebec and Newfoundland.